Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss. Coming up on today's show, it's February 12th. We got bad blood in preseason between Cincinnati and Philadelphia. And Aaron Bupenza was there to throw gasoline on the fire with a Mario Balotelli-esque backheel. More on that in a bit. CONCACAF Champions Cup is back midweek with the Vancouver Whitecaps. Looking at opportunity to knock off Tigres. Can they get it done? And we'll also preview seven more teams. Come on down. Sporting Kansas City, New York Red Bulls, CF Montreal, Austin FC, San Jose Earthquakes, Toronto FC, and DC United. What's up, boys? How much can I expect from you on today's show, David Goss? Fresh off days of Mardi Gras and perhaps more partying to come.
Still rolling through. Wow, that was a really perfect way for that to happen.
Classic case of maybe you haven't talked for like 45 seconds and all of the collective nights out yelling, fill in the blank.
No, that was pure coincidence in that moment.
Sure.
It's not even technically Mardi Gras yet, right? Mardi Gras doesn't start until
the day after. This is preseason for Mardi Gras.
Yeah, it's preseason.
No, no. That's not correct. Fat Tuesday ends it.
Oh, ends it? Okay. I didn't realize.
So the season apparently is from end of Christmas through Fat Tuesday. Fat Tuesday is coming up on Tuesday this week.
And then after Fat Tuesday, everybody... It's Lent, and so everybody stops drinking in New Orleans, and there's no partying and all of that.
I'm sure. And they all wear masks to hide what they're doing on Mardi Gras. And you're like... No, that's not working.
So before we get to today's show and talk about soccer, I've never been to Mardi Gras, nor to New Orleans. I need to have your...
Oh, you never been to New Orleans?
I haven't, no.
Oh, New Orleans is a great city.
So give me your Mardi Gras sell for everyone out there listening, thinking, should I develop the, you know, the hangover that Dave has? Should I do this?
Well, New Orleans is an amazing city. It's like one of those places that is unique in where it is, where you don't always feel like you're in the U.S. I think one of the lines someone told me was like, this is the most Northern Caribbean city in the world. Mm. So it's like, it's its own vibe. It's its own experience. It's its own thing. The architecture, the way it's set up or not set up, like all that stuff. The food's obviously fantastic. But Mardi Gras is just like one of those things where everyone's in a good mood and stoked about the same thing. It's like tailgating for a team everyone likes and like has in common for like, I think 2 weeks. I've only been here for like 4 days, but I think it goes that way. So it's like that. So if you want that type of energy, and like, I think there's a lot to it where you can do it in different ways. I do it where I stand on the side of the street drinking and yelling at people on floats to throw things away from me. I got hit in the teeth opening night and was like, whoa, this is dangerous.
Oh, man. Plastic flying from the skies. Congratulations, by the way, to the Hunt family, to Patrick Mahomes, to myself, to every Chiefs fan out there. Not everyone was rooting for it, but we got it
to
done.
To myself?
Maybe. Three times in the last 5 years.
That he barely watched coming into 2 years ago.
For my sons. For my sons.
Any NFL until 5 years ago.
Not true. I watched NFL religiously until 5 years ago, but I'm back, baby.
Even if the Knicks won the title, I would not have to myself in my like big speech right at the beginning.
Well, that sounds like somebody who isn't going to win a title, hasn't won a title, and doesn't expect to win a title.
That's fair. That is all
their lifetime. All right, let's go, Doyle. So I'm in the back of the Super Bowl. Dave's coming off of Mardi Gras celebrations. You got to carry us here.
Oh, boy.
Coming up this week, we've got, I think the last friendly for Miami before that Wednesday, February 21st, MLS season kickoff against RSL. Of course, you can watch on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV, 8 p.m. Eastern, next Wednesday on the 21st as the season gets started. And then match day one is Saturday. Full match night, MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. You can go make that purchase now. Same prices as last year. We'll have more previews coming. Next Thursday's show will be MLS Awards Show and Golden Boot Draft. Then we'll do the trophy draft and more on Monday, preview Miami RSL, and then we're into it. It's season time. Best thing I saw, the Union in Cincinnati. This was pure Sporting Kansas City RSL back in the day energy. Off the rails. 120 minutes. three different groups playing. Union go up 3-0. Cincy come back. Somehow Aaron Bupenza decides that he's going to round the goalkeeper, turn around, face his own goal, and backheel into an open net with venom, which gets things started. Jose Martinez gets a red card. This is preseason that starts something. And I said it over and over. For Miami, don't care about the results. Still don't care about this result. But the way this match was played is the sort of thing that we hear about, like, let's say, June 19th, when these two teams get back together, that just sets the stage between two good teams in the Eastern Conference to play crazy intense games every single time they take the field.
It was awesome watching the clips from this one come out on social media. Because it had that edge that reminded me of the old Sporting KC RSL games. And for those who don't go back that far, a dozen years ago, Sporting KC versus RSL was one of those rivalries that wasn't based on proximity, but based on mutual loathing amongst the players and I think the staffs. I don't think Philly and Cincy are going to have that amongst the staffs because they're so close. Like Pat Noonan worked at Philly for a long time. Like there are a lot of Philly ties in this Cincinnati group. If you do that in a preseason game, you as a player, you are trying to start something. You are trying to ignite something. And oh yeah, El Brujo, Jose Martinez got a red card like 5 minutes after that.
He's flammable. You're trying to start something. He's ready to go up and flame.
I mean, he went studs up on Lucho Acosta. I didn't see it, but from what I understand, he went studs up on Lucho Acosta almost immediately after Aaron Bupenza scored that backheel goal. I'm glad no one got hurt. I hope nobody is hurt when these two teams meet in June. I wish they were meeting in March. I wish they had a game that mattered against each other sometime in the night. Well, you know what? They might meet in CONCACAF Champions Cup at some point. That would be the best way to really douse this in kerosene and gasoline and any other accelerant that is insanely flammable because it's ready to kick off.
Dave, if this was happening in, let's say, a co-ed game on Monday night, all Megan's friends, and you were on the opposing team and Aaron Bupenza did this to you, it's on site. Yeah, it's on site.
Yeah, I don't get offended by stuff like that as much. So,
oh, stop it.
I know. I'm obviously saying that right
now. I was like, wait, but what? Then what would it be?
I get offended by people who just like do dumb things that don't make sense. Like I get offended when you play a team and like the goalie keeps throwing out goal kicks and you're like, just put the ball down and kick it. You're an adult who's played soccer before. You don't know the rules of soccer. That's the type of stuff that annoys me more. But yeah.
What would you do if one of your teammates did that? Let's say Ben Bear is in one-on-one with the goalkeeper and he dribbles him like that and then turns, pirouette and backheel.
Buy him drink.
Shock of him not missing. The back heel alone would overtake any anger I had about the lack of culture that comes in a moment like that. It's all about culture.
All right,
la cultura.
If EG, right? If our good friend Eric Gockhals, like fantastic soccer player, we call him Figo. He has the skill to do this. If EG did this in a men's league game,
I would. You know I'm protecting him, even though okay. I think it's wrong.
Yeah.
You know that if you come for him, you have to come through me.
Right. But you would have a discussion later over a stake.
Maybe.
All right.
Yeah.
Possibly. We'll see what Aaron Bupenza gets for this one and what happens going forward. But it seems like he's confident. He's trying to rub it in people's face. And a big 4-3 win for Cincinnati. They came back in this one. Pava Busha debuted. Impressed, says Pat Noonan. And I think Luca Oriano, who we talked about as a potential transfer for them, was pictured playing beach volleyball in preseason, at least if the grainy picture is to be confirmed. We'll see what happens with them. Dave, best thing you saw preseason, fill in the blank.
I'm obviously an NBA fan, as everyone knows. And so I'm going low-key Atlanta United having their jersey leaked via the Atlanta Hawks just walking into the stadium.
It was not the good.
Yeah, it was not the good Bogdanovich. It was the bad Bogdanovich. That we have one. It was the little brother. I think it was Clint Capella and Bogdanovich were the two that wore it. Capella's from Switzerland. Bogdanovich is from, I don't know, somewhere in Eastern Europe. I don't know where anyone is.
They're both from the
Balkans. In terms of the NBA guys who are all from that area. But it was cool. And it, yeah, that's not a country, though. It was cool. It's cool to see, like, we see now, like, the Super Bowl, right? Like, Pat Mahomes is a part owner of an NWSL team and, like, loves soccer, and you see the connections more and more. And I just thought, whether it was on purpose or not, I cannot speak to. I just thought it was fun.
Speaking of jerseys, Travis Kelce is apparently a Copa America fan, so big on Leagues Cup. He's all in on that. All right, Dave, you're down. Doyle, let us know. What's your favorite thing in the preseason? Positive, negative, optimistic, pessimistic?
The best thing I saw this week was the Fire coming to an agreement, mutual contract termination agreement with Hiro Torres. Because we talked about this last week on the show that Chicago have done so much great work, but the real issue is they still don't have an elite chance creator unless Brian Gutierrez is going to take an incredible leap this year, which I'm not counting on. They needed to open up that DP slot. They have done so. I'm hoping, I'm not going to assume, but I'm hoping the next step is going to be to add a top tier chance creator, be it a playmaking left winger, and you leave Guti as the 10, or a true number 10, and you put Guti as the playmaking left winger. Either way, this clears the path for the Fire to, like, I already said, I think this is the best the Fire have looked on paper since 2017. If they make a signing here commensurate with what I think is the ownership's ambition, then this will be the best looking Fire team on paper in 15 years. And that's a long time. And those fans have suffered a long time. Now, to be fair, they are also Bears and Cubs and White Sox fans, so they know suffering in Chicago, and they don't really know winning all that well. But this is a team that looks like it could, I'm not going to say win a trophy, but at least make the playoffs. And that is the bar for success in Chicago for the Fire these days. So I'm hoping that the big move in parting with Hiro Torres opens the pathway for another big move in bringing in a young DP playmaker who can be exponentially more successful.
One thing you got to say about John Wensueto is that he's never been afraid to spend money.
Nope.
Not a single bit. We'll see if they go out and spend and make that reinforcement to this roster. But things are trending up in Chicago. Got a ways to go if they want to play in CONCACAF Champions Cup. We're back this week. Tomorrow, Tuesday, Chivas hosting Forge at Akron. Chivas with a lead there. Of course, Kate Cowell was a big part of that. We'll see if they can knock off Forge and keep it moving. Tigres Vancouver, it's 1-1. Tigres came back, got a late goal from APG on Vancouver Island, and now they go to El Volcan. Dave, can Vancouver get it done? Will they?
I think, as has been made evident over the course of this show, as a someone who roots for teams that have never won anything, and as someone who is a terrible bettor, I would pick Vancouver to do a thing no team has ever done. So yes, they can get it done.
What's the recipe, Doyle? If you're Vanni Sartini, what can you take from game one? What do you have to add? What sort of luck do you need? Because let's be honest, that's what it takes.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of luck to get a result at El Volcan against, I mean, Tigres have been the best team in North America for the past dozen years, maybe longer. The blueprint from the first leg holds, right, where you probably absorb more than I think we'll see Vancouver do during the MLS regular season, but regular season versus playing Tigres in any sort of playoff setting is different. So I think they'll probably play a little bit deep. They'll play against the ball, and they'll try to hit on the break. And that is what you should do against Tigres. Like, they do not defend as well in the open field as they did, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. They're just not made for that like they used to be. So I think they're vulnerable there. And I think that Vancouver's ability to get the wingbacks forward is something that can cause problems for Tigres. But the flip side is, if you're defending deep, you're going to give up set pieces around the box. You are going to invite Tigres to have a lot of possession, probably in the attacking third. And they're not at their best when they're all over the ball like that, but they're still, I mean, they're a team with an $80 million budget, right? That is substantially more than everybody else on the continent other than Monterrey and Club America. And that's why they are who they are year after year after year, domestically and internationally. It's why they've made it to the Club World Cup final. It's why they've won, you know, La Liga, I think, 7 times in the past 15 years. They're just that good because they go out and they can spend more. So, yeah, Vancouver are prohibitive underdogs. It would be one of the biggest upsets in CONCACAF Champions Cup history. And I would not pick them to do it. That said, they look very good in leg one. And I think they have enough reps now against Liga MX clubs. Like, they're not going to be scared. Like, they're going to go into El Volcan and, you know, the home team will have their crowd and have all the pressure. And I don't think Vancouver is going to go in there expecting to lose.
The More only like, big thing that stands out to me, I just point out, obviously, is it's going to be really hard without Kubas. Like, he's the center of the formula if they have an idea of how they're going to do it. And that just makes it so much tougher.
More likely, Vancouver gets it done or Real Esteli holds on against America. Both unlikely. Which more likely?
I think Vancouver getting it done is more likely, but we're talking single digit percentiles here.
Right now, everything seems to be tilted
in favor. 0.1 to 0.2.
Yeah.
Not working with high probabilities. Monterrey looks through 4-1 lead against Comunicaciones. Esteli up 2-1 on América, but come on, we know how that second leg normally plays out. Toluca 2-1 on Herediano. Forge, big hill to climb against Chivas, 3-1 deficit right now. And of course, Vancouver and Tigres split goals, and now we'll have to see who gets the result. All right, season previews. We're slowly marching our way toward February 21st and 24th to the start of the 2024 season. We're going to start our season previews, 7 capsules for you today, with Sporting Kansas City. Use a stopwatch on today's show. I need additional checks and balances than just Anders in the chat, who accuses me of ignoring him, of erasure, of many things. So I'm pulling the phone out. I'm hitting start. We're trying to do 7 minutes. Here we go. Sporting Kansas City, 44 points in 2023. That's 4 more points than they had in 2022. But they rose 4 spots from 12th to 8th with those 4 points. Got into the Western Conference playoffs. They won the wild card at home against San Jose. Then they beat down their rivals, St. Louis City, 6-2 in round 1. And then lost 1-0 to Houston in a disappointing conference semifinal exit. Here is their haiku. A quiet window. For a club on the cup cusp, show me a DP. Sporting Kansas City have a designated player spot open. We'll talk about that in a second. It's been a quiet window. Alenis Vargas, a 21 Honduran, he's in. He was on loan to Sporting KC2 last year. More of a winger than a forward, but can play both. Of course, Logan Ndembe had the injury, taking him out long-term. Zorhan Basong is cover at left back. Memo Rodriguez signed as a free agent after a trial and a goalkeeper out of the super draft. Meanwhile, in the outs, Gadi Kinda and some legends. Graham Zusi, Roger Espinoza, and Felipe Gutierrez. Doyle, what is Peter Vermees cooking with here? What's it look like in 2024?
I mean, it's Peter Vermees, so you know it's going to look like a 4-3-3. And I think what we saw over the back half of last season, really the final two-thirds of last season, is the formation, the game model, it all still works as long as the best players on the roster are healthy. That was the problem the first part of last year, and it was the solution once those guys all got into the lineup. So 4-3-3, heavy possession, wide overloads, wingers prominently involved, both in terms of playmaking and goal scoring, and some pressing. They're not the team they were a dozen years ago in terms of the amount of pressure that they put. You know, when they lose possession, they don't win it quite. They don't win it back quite as high or quite as quickly. But they're still one of the better pressing teams in the league. There's no mysteries here, right? We've all seen Peter Vermees do this for 15 years. I don't think that's going to change in 2024.
Star spotlight, Alan Pulido, new contract, taking Alan long-term, basically through the World Cup in 2026. Played his most minutes last year, Dave, for Sporting Kansas City in the regular season. Almost 800 minutes more than 2021. 14 goals, 3 assists, 26 starts for Alan Pulido. In the playoffs, no goals, but had a couple assists, helped fuel that win against St. Louis in particular. What should be expected from Alan Pulido with the new deal?
Everything. Like, he should be at his best. He should be the player that he's been when he's been healthy, which is arguably the best number nine in the league. Not always super traditional of like being the guy on the end of the play who scores every goal. He's, as you talked about, a really good playmaker. And with Johnny Russell and Daniel Shallowy and Eric Tommy and the other players that play off him, he can create, and he can create at a high level. And it allows SKC to be an elite team. Remember, after the injuries, the first half of the year, they were on a point per game pace to be the number one team in MLS in the Western Conference. It would be about 58 points. And then they went and beat St. Louis, the number one team in the West, in the for them, the second round of the playoffs. And they pushed Houston as well. It's tough single elimination on the road. That should be the expectation for SKC from day one. All of that is built around Alan Pulido. It is a risk to rely on a player with his injury history. It is a risk that SKC has decided to take. It did not work out for them the last 2 years. So the hope is the year that it works, they're able to shoot the moon and go all the way.
2,200 minutes, over or under. What do you guys take?
All competitions?
MLS only.
I'll take under for MLS only, but all competitions, I think he goes over 2,200 minutes. But it's... You know, this is flipping a coin.
Because you're Pulido's, thinking there is they will use him in other competitions, and so like they're going to.
I mean,
focus on knockouts.
I mean, Willy Agata is waiting back there. He's got goals to score. Obviously,
I still believe in Willy Agata. I'm probably not going to take him first in the Golden Boot draft, but I still believe Willy Agata is. And
Don't tip your strategy. Don't tip your
plans. he throws a curveball. Right. He is a very different type of center forward than Alan Pulido is. Alan Pulido is a false nine. He likes to play make. He will drift. He will find gaps. Whereas Willy Agata, he is very vertical. Right. He wants to run into space. And we saw the end of 2022 and then a little bit the end of 2023, once he finally got over that stress fracture that kind of derailed him. He's so effective at that. And he gives those wingers. He gives them time and space in a different way than Pulido does.
So if you go check Doyle on X, Twitter, whatever, Matt Doyle 76, more fan fiction on Willy Agata's strengths and hot start to the 2024 season coming there. How about interesting players to watch outside the star? Eric Tommy, Jake Davis, Danny Rosero. There's some options here. Eric Tommy, because they didn't go reinvest in the 10. Gadi Kinda's gone, open DP spot. Peter Vermees says they've made some efforts to sign players, but things have fallen through, and it's highly unlikely a DP is not signed before the season starts. Dave, take your pick. Who's the most interesting player to watch outside of Pulido?
It's highly unlikely a DP is not signed.
Is signed. Okay. But remember, the window's open till April.
Okay.
Also remember that Eric Tommy was on more money than Gadi Kinda, who was a DP. So, like, Kinda was DP in name only. It also, I think, as you mentioned those names, like while Alan Pulido is up there in terms of like expenditure and quality, Johnny Russell's on the border as well and has played well in MLS. What makes SKC good is they have a bunch of talent across the board. It is not just reliant on one or two people. This is not going to make KC fans feel better that they're not going to sign a DP, but it's not like this is a team. We're going to talk about San Jose in a little bit, where there's a huge question mark if they don't, because you don't know what the team is built around. Like, they still have all those pieces. In saying all that, obviously Jake Davis, best player in Major League Soccer history. I could watch him pass out of the right back position for years. Perfect texture and shape on most of the balls he plays out of that position. So that's the guy.
And look, in Kansas City, if you like a right back, you will get to watch him more than likely for years and years and years. Welcome to Jake Davis to the starting lineup. I'm going to go Eric Tommy to go back to the well there. He sort of lost that spot to Gadi Kinda. Kinda more of a player who wants to receive the ball, turn, drive forward. Tommy more of a long shot guy, a big switch guy, a passer than he is necessarily someone who drives forward and tries to create for himself. And there is the timer, which we will basically ignore once again. Off to a great start here. Over under 23.5 combined goals and assists for Russell and Shallowy. They had 27 combined last year and 21 the year before. So we split the difference. 24.5 What do you got, Doyle?
Are we just talking regular season?
That's always the case.
All right. Then I will still take the over. But I'm not super confident in that.
Russell out for the early parts of last season. I'm going to take the over on that as well. I think we're back to close to the 2023 numbers as opposed to a disappointing 2022. So probably in that 27 region. Last year it was 7-9 for Shallowy and 8-3 for Johnny Russell. There's also growth there. I think they could jump way over that. Doyle, what's the this is fine meme?
That they don't have enough depth and that their top end talent just isn't quite good enough. And we saw that against Houston. In that Western Conference semifinal, Houston were just so much better on the ball through midfield. And then, you know, none of the wingers or Pulido as a center forward were really game breakers. And given Russell's age and Pulido's age, and Shallowy is not like quite DP level, that's the this is fine meme. That it's just like all together, it's all pretty good, but none of it is great. Now, that can change if they get the right DP in, but it's a big if at this point.
Finish up, Dave. Why could this be their year? And please define their year for me.
MLS Cup. Like I said, the age of the players that they've spent on, the years Peter Vermes has had to build it. I think what they were asking of their fans last year in saying, like, trust us, as guys get back, we'll be okay, is because if they are healthy, they think they're the best team in Major League Soccer and in the Western Conference. So that should be the expectations. That should be the goals this year. I think it's realistic. Again, what I said of what we saw last year when they were healthy. But it's a question mark every year now with them. These are aging players who have injury histories. It is not assumed that a lot of these guys are going to be able to get back. And then I think Doyle also mentioned, like, they could fall off a cliff. Tim Melia could fall off the cliff. Johnny Russell could. It's going to happen at some point, and it could be 2024.
Andrew Infantos could. Berdoha could be hurt. Valtteri could not be available and not at the level he wants to play. Tommy might not be a top-tier 10 or even mid-tier 10. We'll see. Sporting Kansas City, a big season. Maybe on the brink of cups, maybe not. They've sort of been yo-yoing recently. New York Red Bulls are up next. Start the timer and try to hit it. 43 points, down 10 points from a year ago, eighth in the East. Got a big wild card win against Charlotte. And then PK dramatics against Cincy, finished off a round one sweep for the Shield winners. So no cup for the Red Bulls. Their haiku is as follows. The fans are all in. Pain is part of that bargain. Please, just chase the cup. I did not say win the cup in the haiku. There are steps that have to happen before you win a cup. I said chase because Red Bulls supporters know you got to have the team. You have to have the investment to win it. And there is a DP spot open for the New York Red Bulls right now. So key transfers, Emil Forsberg is the biggest one. He might be the best signing this team has made in a decade plus. There's a center back, young center back, Noah Eilt. He is perhaps a depth piece. Roald Mitchell is a homegrown forward. And out, Omer Fernandez, Drew Yearwood, Tom Barlow, and Luquinhas. So some addition by subtraction there and some big-time depth that they lost as well. Take me inside the Sandro Schwartz machine this year, Doyle. Do we know how he's going to play? Like, what's it look like?
It's going to look like Red Bull soccer. I think that is a given no matter who the coach is. That means the highest, hardest pressing in the league, the most long balls in the league, the lowest pass completion percentage in the league. The Red Bull system trades possession for field position. And the idea is whatever formation you play, get the ball into the right spots. And even if the pass isn't completed, you have a chance at winning a 50-50. And if you win that 50-50 or a 40-60 or a 30-70, because that's the other thing, Red Bull players treat 30-70s like 50-50s. You win the ball there, suddenly you're 30 yards from goal and you're just one pass away. And you just keep playing those odds again and again and again. Sandro Schwartz isn't going to change that. Troy Lesane didn't change it. Gerhard Struber didn't change it. Chris Armas tried to change it a little bit back in the day. And I don't think that necessarily went over too well with Red Bull Global. So it's going to be that. The only question is, well, last year they played more of a 4-2-2-2. Sandra Schwartz over his career has preferred either like a 4-3-3 or sometimes a 4-2-3-1. I'm not sure what that's going to mean for formation, but for tactics, it's going to be the same old Red Bull stuff.
How does Emil Forsberg fit into what Red Bull's New York, not Leipzig, are doing, Dave? How big of a star can he be?
He can be massive because he already understands what it requires because he's been in the Red Bull family his entire life. And he can do things at a higher level. Then there's that finishing quality, set piece service. I mean, the ability to turn all those 50-50s Doyle talked about into goals is about your ability to get to goal fast enough and transition from that turnover into your attacking moments at a really high level. So his ability to do that, but have that quality to get out of tight spaces, that clean first touch to get you going in the right direction, and then see passes, I think, that we haven't seen Red Bull attackers be able to do since Sasha Kljestan, and pick apart a defense when they are set in the final third, which has been Red Bull's weakness for years. And so it's obviously a perfect signing because he's basically played for your team in a different league. So he knows what it requires and he knows how to step in, and you kind of know what you're going to get from him. I think the question mark, and not question mark because it won't work, just I don't know, is how big of an improvement he can be. Like, how big of a game changer can he be for them? Because the system is the star for Red Bull. With Sweden, we haven't seen like the best moments from him. He often is the first sub off coming off for Sweden in big moments in big games. And so I think we're going to find out how much, when the game rests on his shoulders, that he can do it this year.
How much help will be around him? Most interesting players to watch outside Forsberg, Dante Van Zier came in with a big price tag, big expectations, did not deliver on those in year one in a variety of ways. Lewis Morgan was a best 11 quality player in 22, but he was absent basically all of last year with hip issues, had surgery, hasn't played yet in the preseason. High ceiling? Can you even get him in the building to see what the ceiling and floor are for Lewis Morgan in 24? That's an open question mark. How about that midfield duo, though, Doyle? Daniel Edelman and Frankie Amaya, a lot on their shoulders.
Yeah, I got no questions about them. I thought they were excellent last year. I said repeatedly on this show, and anytime somebody shoved a mic in my face, is like the Red Bulls made 90% of the games they played into Red Bull games. Right? Like they dictated the terms of how that game was going to be, you know, play out. And teams didn't beat the Red Bulls. They survived against the Red Bulls and then kind of let the Red Bulls shoot themselves in the foot. We saw it right up until into the final game of the season. Edelman and Amaya are both really good. I don't have questions about them. I think it's Van Zier. I think Van Zier is the one who has to live up to his DP tag, live up to his price tag, and he has to put the ball into the back of the net because, unfortunately, it does not seem like there's going to be another goal scorer signed, at least not before the season starts. It's a disappointment for Red Bull fans because they do have a slot open, and if they did the NYCFC thing and used the organization's global reach to pull in top tier prospects from around the world, I think it would really not just benefit the team on the field, but I think it would benefit the fan base. I think the fans are sophisticated enough to understand that and buy into it. So right now, it seems like it's all falling on Van Zier and, I guess, to a lesser extent, like Elias Manuel and maybe Serge Ngoma.
Oh, the cafes in Brooklyn are awash with Manuel conversation and chatter this time of year. Over under, home wins 8.5, Dave. Last time they did that, what year was it? Do you know? Went over, that is.
2018.
2019, they got 9. 2018, it was, of course, the Shield winning team. They got 71 points, had 14 wins at home. So 8.5 home wins, over or under. This is like determining basically whether or not they are a top 5, maybe even 6 Eastern Conference team, or just sort of a hopeful playoff team?
I'm going to go over. Doyle talked about the midfield, how strong they were. They also have one of the best center back pairings in the league. They've locked those guys in. Carlos Cornell wasn't as good last year as he was his first year, but he's still an elite MLS goalkeeper. And so if you're a fan of this team, you should expect to come and watch them play and have a team that has all of the makings of a solid base with your two record signings on the field.
Like, that's the one, that's why this could be their year, I think, right?
Well, but isn't that why they're going to win home games then?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Just the
buzzer went off. You're saying I did a good job.
You did a great job because, you know, the buzzer went off. We're trying to maximize time. You just weaved those two things in. Prime form from you. How about the "this is fine" meme, Doyle, which Red Bulls fans are much more familiar with?
Goals, right? I already did the Van Zier monologue a little bit, and the fact that there's no other new DP number nine. If they went out and signed that guy, I would be talking about the Red Bulls as a cup contender, like top tier cup contender, because they were that good through midfield and defense last year. But that hasn't happened yet, and I haven't heard any rumors that it is going to happen, but we'll see.
If you were going to sign a DP, would you sign it now or would you wait till summer to see what Lewis Morgan can get you? Because if Morgan is not going to be a difference maker anymore, perhaps that changes the math as far as nine versus winger attacking midfield.
I would still go for a number nine. I thought they looked good in the 4-2-2-2 last year. And I think they have enough coming through the system. And I think you also have to trust that Morgan will eventually get back to something close to his best self as a wide attacker.
All right, let's keep it moving. Montreal, 41 points last year. That is 24 points down from 2023, but it is on the back of a yo-yo before that, because 2023 was a plus 19 from 2022, so they're going up and down. 10th in the East, missed out on the playoffs. We all witnessed that on MLS season pass, the pain on decision day, missed by 2 points, big bummer. Hernan Losada is out, that's the consequence. Laurent Courtois in from Columbus Crew 2, where he went to two straight MLS Next Pro finals. The Haiku, trust the ball. Again, are they quietly cooking or a yo-yo club? Boy, the up and downs in Montreal. The transfer window was quite busy in. Raheem Edwards traded from the Galaxy. Huon from D.C. Domek Yankov from over in Europe.
Ludogorets Razgad.
Hey, there you go. Thank you so much. Matias Kokoro from Huracan. Joseph Martinez is a free agent. He's in. Sebastian Brezza and Joaquin Sosa coming over from Bologna to provide some depth on the back line. And at goalkeeper out, Aaron Herrera traded to D.C. That didn't work out. Romo Kyoto, Chino Sofor, Zachary Brogiard, Ahmed Hamdi, and James Pantemis. Laurent Courtois, he's going back to possession, which is apparently where Montreal wanted to be last year, Doyle, but made the wrong hire to do so. How far back can he tilt that model?
I think he's going to try to tilt it all the way based upon what we saw with Crew 2 when he was the manager over the last couple of years, and based upon what the chief soccer officer Olivier Renard said after last season, like, oh, we didn't realize Hernan Losada was going to be playing against the ball so much. Like, all right, that's an interesting hire. But Olivier Renard said, we want to go back to what we were under Wilfred Nancy, which was, in the first line of your haiku, we'd be trust the ball again. And I think that is going to be the defining feature of this Montreal team. I think they are going to have some when playing out of the back goes wrong moments, especially early in the season. But I think they're going to be infinitely more watchable this year. And I expect to be able to find regular clips of them showing roughly the same principles of play that the crew do, which means put your foot on the ball, be patient, drag the defense towards you, and then be aggressive about bypassing that first line, because it's easier to attack against nine than it is against 10.
Dave, I don't know that we have a star set here, and that's maybe a bad thing, but also a good thing for Montreal. A lot of guys who could step into that role. Let's change this up. Not now, into the season. Who's the star of this team?
I mean, the hope would be it's one of the attacking players that they just brought in. We have to have a Wanyama conversation as well, how good he was 2 years ago and that he was barely playing last year. And with what Doyle talked about, going back to what Wilfred Nancy did so well, he should resurface. But I think the reason this team will win and the reason you'll talk about this team is because of their back five, because of their goalkeeper and their three center backs. That's what's going to keep them in games. That's what's going to keep them in a playoff hunt, no matter who is scoring and who's a part of that. So I don't know that you call Joel Waterman a star, but like, shout out to Joel Waterman.
On this show, we do. We'll sell you on it at least. Yankov, Kokaro, Joseph, whoever it is. I mean, you think about guys from the summer transfer window last year. Bryce Duke, Opoku. There are a bunch of opportunities and chances for players to step up in a more settled team, and you hope that settle is coming. Over under, 1.5 goals allowed per game, Dave. How good is that back line?
It's special. And I didn't know that Waterman was going to be able to be the center guy last year. Once they let Rudy Camacho left, Kamal Miller left, he has slid from being the right side center back into the middle. And he's legit. He can win everything in the air. He's comfortable on the ball, but he's a really good organizer. And George Campbell, it feels like now, might be the player that we thought he was going to be in Atlanta, where he got plenty of opportunity, but that team wasn't ready. I don't think for a young center back to play in that system the way what was required of him to defend in space 1v1, it's easier for him here. The game's in front of him for the most part. And then Corbo's been really good since he got here. And I think last year it was late when he came in. So now he gets a preseason, he gets time, and they've got two options in goal behind them that are both match winners in Major League Soccer. So there's a huge opportunity there. It sets a platform for Juan to be able to attack at will, which he should have a really good time with. But as we go through these teams and you talk about MLS teams right now, it's, we hope this Scandinavian center back hits. We hope this Eastern European center back hits. We hope this South American center back hits. There are not a lot of teams that have stability like Montreal does in the back.
Stability was Victor Wanyama 2 years ago. And Victor Wanyama on the ball, Doyle, often gives space, time, and predictability for the center backs behind him. How much of a role does Victor play? I mean, it was a whole dramatic DP negotiation for him then to not really have a role of any significance in 2023. That can't be the same in 24.
No, it can't. And I think that's part of why they went out and they got Laurent Courtois as the head coach, because he's going to play a system that emphasizes the best traits of the guy who I think is probably still their best player in Victor Wanyama. If he can stay healthy, if he can play 2,000 regular season minutes, I think that Montreal will be in very good shape. I still think they're going to give up more than 1.5 goals per game. I'm not as high on their back line, but I think it'll be a step forward as a club nonetheless, because they will go back to the identity that they had in 21 and 22 when they were on the come up and they were one of the most fun teams in the league to watch. And oh yeah, they made a bundle of money developing and selling their young players, and they have a ton of young talent on this team as well.
So there's some hope there from you. Take that hope away. Take me inside the burning building. The dog is drinking coffee and it's fine, and they've taken a step back because why?
Because they try to do too much with the ball, and the losses pile up early in the season, and they're bad losses, and they eventually throw the baby out with the bathwater, and there's just not enough vision to suffer through the low moments to eventually build towards the success that they had under Wilfred Nancy. There's not enough patience to do it. And we all know that Montreal ownership hasn't been the most patient in the world.
All right, Dave, I couldn't bear to put you on the side of pessimism when it came to this Montreal team. So be an optimist. It's summer in Montreal. We're going to the stadium. Everything is beautiful. Why?
They have actually gotten more experienced and older over the course of this transfer window. There should be two or three starters in this team that are 26, 30, and it makes the game easier for these young players who are learning on the fly, right? Last year, Nathan Saliba is trying to learn to play a new position, and he looks around and there's a bunch of other kids alongside him. And so now you bring in Kokoron, you bring in Juan even, who's been around this league and has won in this league in the past. And you've got a lot of guys who got a year of experience. So you look at a team, as I said, that has a great base to build off of and strength at the back. And some of the young attackers are able to hit because the game is easier for them. There's less pressure on them, I think. And you're less reliant, and you're playing soccer that you enjoy again. And you're playing a game and a model that you know you can trust, because if you do it at a high level, you can win.
Success is about that model, yeah? It's not just points. Like, if they made the playoffs, but they didn't solidify the model at all, or the style of play, or the future, it would be less successful than if they stuck into the playoffs and were true to that model.
Amen. Yeah? Amen. Amen.
All right, Austin FC trying to find a model. 39 points, down 17 year over year. 12th in the West, missed the playoffs by 5 points. The Haiku, Burrell is learning. Mistakes take time to correct. Can't schedule success. Key transfers in. Hunter Obreon in the reentry draft. Diego Rubio, good free agent signing if his body cooperates. Stephen Cleveland, a possible starter to compete there in goal. And then Guilherme Biro, a transfer from the, I think, the lower divisions in Brazil to play left back. Out, Kip Keller, Adam Lundqvist, Rodney Redis, Memo Rodriguez, Maxi Arruti, Nick Lima, Johan Romana. During the season, Diego Fagundes, et cetera, et cetera. What's Josh Wolf got to do with the new front office behind him, but much of the same team this year, Doyle?
Yeah, I think it'll look the same in a lot of ways in terms of, like, it'll be a 4-2-3-1. The you know, Driussi is the attacking centerpiece, and they'll try to emphasize positional play. Like, this is a team that, especially with Rodolfo Borrell in town, and we know his background with City Football Group and Barcelona, they're basically the progenitors of positional play. Josh Wolf sees the game the same way. That is why Josh Wolf is still there as the manager. That means getting on the ball a ton, trying to dictate where the game is played and the tempo it's played at. The problem for Austin last year was that became ponderous, and that when they got into the final third, rather than using positional play to create overloads that allowed for incisive moments, they all sort of threw up their hands, got it wide, and launched cross after cross after cross. So the hope is to take all the principles that they're operating under and be sharper and more incisive and at times more direct with it. But it'll look the same, largely the same as it did last year.
Where does Sebastian Driussi fall on the Driussi scale? Dave, MVP candidate or sort of decent output for a DP, but sort of stuck in the muck and the mire of a poor season?
I'm glad you weebied that and then talked through it, because I literally had no idea what that meant.
I saw your eyes. I saw your eyes.
What was the Driussi
scale? I saw your eyes.
That we have?
I saw your eyes when I said Driussi scale, and I said, well, I better just explain this a little bit more deeply.
I think he, like this team, will fall in the middle, right? 2 years ago, they overperformed. Last year, I think they over-regressed. So I think the reality for Austin, even if they don't make a bunch of moves, is somewhere in the middle. Your hope is Zardes is able to find his feet a little bit this year. And I think inside that positional play that Doyle talked about, I think there's a ton of opportunity for him to find the best spots that he can find.
I'm going to interrupt. I don't think Zardes is the starter anymore. I think it's Diego Rubio. I think that I think they signed him last.
A much better soccer player.
Yeah. I mean, I still think Jossie is better off the ball, and that makes him better for most teams. But if you look at how Rubio is very similar to Alan Pulido, in that he's as comfortable dropping off the line and combining and playmaking, and he doesn't score traditional center forward goals, whereas Driussi kind of does. And the best that we saw from Driussi 2 years ago was one-touch finishes off of box movement. He and Jossie were never able to get aligned last year and playing off each other, whereas I think it'll come naturally with Rubio in that position.
Most interesting player to watch outside of Driussi? We sort of went over Diego Rubio there. How about Owen Wolf and Danny Pereira?
Danny Pereira is the guy that I tune into to watch. Like, I enjoy watching him play soccer. A good friend of the show, Bobby Warshaw, loves good hips and a half turn, and Danny Pereira loves to do that. So anytime they're building out through the middle third, he has the ability to turn you on the half turn and start attacking space. And it's fun. He moves at pace with the ball at his foot at a really high level. He's learning how to make better decisions once he gets there. And inside the positional play of, like, oh, the system is the star, don't really think, just do. He is one of the few players that can throw a wrench in there and throw a different wrinkle in, even though he does it from a deeper position, and change the game. And so he's the guy that I sign up for. And I think for Austin, long-term as a club, you know, the academy is new, the club is new. Danny Pereira should be their first sale. He should be their Georgi Mihailovic. This isn't a real development player, but, like, let's get the pipeline going in the other direction. And he should be at the point of that. And so it's an interesting year for him, because I'm a little surprised that he's even back.
Shakira, Bobby Warshaw, Hips Don't Lie. What's expectation for Owen Wolf, though?
I expect him to be a starter. Last year, I thought he was good or promising or both in most of his minutes, which is a lot for an 18-year-old. My question is, do he and Denny Pereira fit in the same midfield together? Because they do a lot of the same things. I think Wolf is a little bit more direct, wants to go a little bit more north-south, whereas Pereira's a little bit more comfortable getting on the ball and in traffic and kind of running the game. But there's a lot of overlap there, and what there isn't a lot of is ball winning. So I almost wonder if, I'm going to bring it back to Barcelona again, the way Xavi has used Gavi, the young central midfielder for Barcelona over the past year and a half, has been kind of like as a false left winger. Like, he's out there to run off the ball and occasionally create penetration, but really what he does is come inside and make the 4-2-3-1 into almost like a diamond. So I wonder if Owen Wolf starts a lot of games on the left wing or even the right wing, and creates sort of different shapes and different overloads while Pereira and Ring kind of do the defensive work in deep central midfield. The other thing is, if you play Wolf as a right wing, you can do kind of the Houston thing where you're getting all over the ball and your right winger is not really a right winger. I mean, they were playing Karaskia as a right winger last year. You could play Owen Wolf in that role and he comes inside and you make kind of either a box or a diamond midfield, and then you clear the runway for your attacking right back, which in this case John Gallagher was maybe the only bright spot on this Austin team all of last year.
Maybe he's doing a lot of work there.
I had no idea where I was going with that segment until I started talking, and then it just kind of unfolded. That felt good.
I mean, you landed the plane right at 7 minutes, so we've only got three more categories within here to go. So that was perfect. That was perfect. Over under, I'll handle this one. Under's added 4.5 summer signings. I'm up at the 5.5. You can feel the impatience of Rodolfo Borrell, of his desire to change the roster, to add talent, to subtract, and his troubles doing so far. So let's see if we can figure that out. But I think you can bet the summer is going to be pretty busy. This is fine meme, Dave. Give it to us quick. The basics. Why would this team collapse?
This is one of the thinnest rosters in Major League Soccer. And outside of the MVP candidate, or, you know, the 2 years MVP candidate, there is not elite talent at a lot of positions. A lot of what Doyle mentioned, and I think is right, the promise of Rubio. There's a reason no one else signed him. No one knows if he can play. Like, no one knows if he has his knees. No one knows if he can be an everyday player. And so that's been the only acquisition. Center back's been a hole. They've tried to make signings throughout the seasons over the last 3 years to try and fill it. They can't. Alex Ring was a DP last year that we haven't mentioned yet. That wasn't a starter when the season started. I think he was a starter at the end out of necessity, because there wasn't enough players. So if it all goes wrong again, two injuries here, or even with the talent that's available, you know, Rigoni having to be there the whole year and it not working out, it could be last year again.
What is a success, Doyle? Don't be saying cups. Give me a very basic success point. Sixth place in the West, for instance.
I mean, sixth place in the West would be a massive success for this team. I think just showing that they have ideas in the final third again is the bar that I'm looking for this team. Like, yeah, they're going to have a lot of the ball. Show me that you can do something with it. If they get out of 2024 with that, a blueprint that works at least somewhat in the attack, then I'll consider that a success for this year. Because like David said, this roster is thin and there's not a lot of high-end talent either.
All right, San Jose Earthquakes, 44 points. That was a 9-point improvement under Lucha Gonzalez. I got him to ninth. Got him to the playoffs. Did not keep them in the playoffs. Lost to Sporting Kansas City in the wild card match on the road. The haiku: structure is nice, but goals are the name of the game. Time to sign a 10. They have an open DP spot. Jamiro Montero left. He signed in Turkey the other day. Nico Chiquiris, Cruz Medina. I don't know. Does Lucci really want to play with a number 10? I'm also not sure about that. If he does, what's the profile? That's sort of what's hanging over San Jose right now. But they have a pretty busy transfer window with some pretty good-looking profiles here on the inside. Amal Pellegrino comes over from Bodo Glimt. He is in his early 30s, but an absolute goal scorer. at the level he's played at in Norway. Victor Costa comes over from Portugal. His team was relegated. He comes in to bolster the fullback position at left back. Bruno Wilson comes from Bizela in Portugal. Rodriguez was bought from Grêmio early in the offseason. So you have a starting center back pairing and three of the four speaking Portuguese along the back line, including your goalkeeper, Daniel. So that should work out nicely. Alfredo Morales in from New York City. Preston Judd from LA Galaxy to provide depth at the number nine position. William Yarbrough, another goalkeeper in from Colorado with a potential high upside. On the out, Cade Cowell, who's piggyback riding people at Chivas right now. I mean, jumping on people's backs, celebrating. He's fitting right in. Judson, Jamiro Montero, Nathan, Miguel Trauco, Jonathan Mensah, and Matthew Hoppe. What's this look like for Lucci? Doyle, how does he take it one step further?
It's very similar to what I said about Austin, in that they do a lot of positional play. You mentioned structure in your haiku. Nicely done. Lucci spent a lot of time last year making sure the structure of the team, specifically defensively, was improved relative to what it had been the previous half decade, which low bar. And to be fair, Daniel, who was awesome last year, papered over a lot of the cracks that they had defensively that structure couldn't quite take care of. But when they got into the final third, across the board, every attacker's underlying numbers dropped. And for the most part, their box score numbers dropped as well. The one outlier there was Christian Espinoza, who was awesome last year, but also his numbers were a little bit inflated because he took all the penalty kicks. So they weren't a good attacking team. Jeremy Bobasi dropped from 17 goals to, I think, 10. Pretty precipitous for a guy in his prime who was mostly healthy. They didn't get a lot out of that midfield. It's all very static with San Jose for the most part, and they have to address that. Tactically, this is what we want to see, like a little bit more dynamism. Maybe that means being a little bit more adventurous with allowing the fullbacks to overlap, or maybe that means getting an actual number 10, a guy who can run the show and just create advantageous attacking moments through his own individual brilliance.
Can you weave this a little bit, Dave? We're on Star Spotlight now, and I had that as Espinoza Abobasi.
Yeah, I think so. I think Christian Espinoza proved last year that he can be the best player on a good team. He needs more support. But I look at this group, and if nothing else happens, even with the loss of Montero, I think the upgrade from Pellegrino over Cowell is going to be huge. Like, Cade Cowell has a lot of potential, and we're seeing a lot of it with Chivas. There was no delivery over the last 2 years for San Jose. He wasn't consistent. You couldn't play through him. I actually think he limited a lot of what they were able to do in possession because his touch isn't very clean. And so you can't really play through him quickly and keep the ball moving. And I think that limits things like allowing that fullback to overlap, because you don't know if you're going to keep the ball and you don't know if it's a safe time to get forward. So I think just that one move is going to be big for this team going forward, but they do still need a number 10 to help take the pressure off Espinoza, help create chances for Abobasi, help a lot of these players take a next step forward. But the structure is there for that. And there are some teams in MLS where I'd say even with that 10 you bring in, they're still not ready to compete.
Pellegrino is the most interesting player to watch, in my opinion. Here is his resume. Two-time reigning Golden Boot winner in Norway, 49 goals over two seasons, 25-1, 24 in the most recent. He was also the player of the year for Bodø/Glimt. They've won the league 3 out of 4 years. He spent his whole career sort of at that level and leveling up. But it wasn't just in Norway. 17 goals in UEFA competitions, Champions League, Europa League, Conference League. 75 goals in 121 games for Bodø/Glimt. 32 years old, sort of an interesting profile of a guy who got to basically the top level in his league in Scandinavia and is now coming to start a new experience. But man, goal scoring is what they need. Goal scoring is what Pellegrino has had. And doing it in, frankly, spectacular fashion. And I'm basing that strictly on highlight videos. But some really, really nice goals. Looks like a really smooth player in finishing moments, both from distance as well as inside the box. We'll watch him pretty closely, as well as these guys on the back line. That was quietly a strength for San Jose last year, from goalkeeper through the back four. A new center back, a new left back. We'll see how those guys fit in. Here's your over-under. Will they win a playoff series, or 12.5 goals an assist from Pellegrino. Which one would you take first? I would take the Pellegrino. I think 12 and a half goals and assists. I mean, they should expect somewhere in that region, hopefully more in the 15 region from Pellegrino.
Yeah, I think that is an easy take. I think 12 or 12.5 over under is a good line. But I think comparing that to will they win a playoff series, it's like very clearly I'm going to go with 12.5 goals from goals and assists from Pellegrino. I just, if you look at the Quakes, just on raw talent, they're going to be underdogs in most games they play, including and especially into the playoffs if they actually make it. There's just not enough in this team. Unless Pellegrino instantly walks in his best 11, there's not enough in this team in attack for me to be at all confident that they could win a playoff series.
Dave, you were vibing with the structure, with what Lucci's built, but you hear the flip side there from Doyle. What's the this is fine meme? Is it as simple as talent?
Yeah, and I think depth of – there's a lot of young players in midfield that could be good, but if you lose a starter for 4 months for this San Jose team – you could be rolling out, you know, two homegrowns that aren't ready next to each other a lot of games in a row. So I think it's a thin team, and that puts you in danger of injury concerns. And yeah, everything that Doyle talked about, not, you know, if it all doesn't come together correctly, like they have to play perfect against a lot of teams because they don't have the best talent on the field.
All right, Doyle, you weren't picking a playoff victory over Pellegrino over under. But what is the year for San Jose? What's a success?
Success is making it into the playoffs, scoring 50 goals, and developing Sakiris into a starter, or Cruz Medina, one or the other, right? One of their high upside young attacking midfield types, turning those guys into. Like San Jose kind of want to be the West Coast version of Philadelphia. Philadelphia became Philadelphia when they developed and sold Brendan Aaronson. Like Sakiris can be that kid for like Cowell was supposed to be. And to be fair, he's been pretty good for Chivas so far. But there's a difference between selling a kid for $4 million to a Mexican club versus selling a kid for $8 or $10 million to a Champions League club in Europe. And I think that is the path that San Jose want to take.
All right, I think we closed in on 7 minutes there. I mean, somewhere in that region. So congratulations to us for the first time. Toronto FC, no congratulations for the Reds. Tough season
it's
in 2023.
It's we being the Chiefs all over again.
Yeah, I know, dude. I'll crown myself. I will crown myself right now. Toronto FC, 22 points. That is shocking. Minus 12 points. Last in the East. Spoon winners. Haiku. Same group. New results? Insanity, said Einstein. Go crazy, Herdman. Key transfers in. John Herdman, kind of. Tyrese Spicer out of the Super Draft. Davey Flores coming over to play in the midfield. And that's really it. On the outside, there is a lot of outgoing, but the big names, CJ Sapong, Christian Gutierrez, Michael Bradley. As far as big names go, that's about it. It feels like same group, different results, because you're hoping for the Stars to play under Herdman. Doyle, what is the job for John Herdman?
It's a big one. I don't know exactly what formation they're going to line up in. I don't know the starters at least a half dozen spots. We don't know if the Italians are going to buy in tactically. That, you know, John Herdman's Canadian teams, both men's and women's, were, I think, better in transition than they were with the ball. But at their best, and I think about the goal that they scored against the U.S. national team in Nashville at the start of qualifying and way back in 2021, it felt like a counterattacking goal, but it was actually built out of sustained deep possession. And they pulled the U.S. up, and then Alphonso Davies was able to be Alphonso Davies and hit a running lane at speed in a place where nobody could catch him. Like, that is what I think Toronto would want to be. I have no idea if they have the personnel for that. And I think the first half of the season is going to be about finding out which players are committed to the project, about finding out which of the young guys can play, and maybe in the process about finding out what the actual blueprint is and what the formation is going to be. I cannot remember the last time a non-expansion team had this many question marks heading into the season. It is a massive, I think, years-long undertaking to remedy what has gone wrong with this team.
No word yet on whether Lorenzo and Senior Federico Bernardeschi will be motivated by the presence of swords in the locker room. So John Herdman may have to try a different bit here with this Toronto team. Star spotlight, it's Insigne and Bernardeschi, Dave. Will they be bought in? Can they change the fortunes of this club?
You think I'd be on this show if I knew the answers?
Yeah,
to
no,
those
fair.
Questions?
Yeah.
I'd be running TFC, and that's the whole gamble. I mean, it was the gamble when they brought these guys in. It was obviously going to make it tough to build out the rest of your roster well because of how much money you invested in those two players, but the idea was they'd be the two best players on the field in every game you played in now, except for against Inter Miami. And that can be a winning formula in its own way. So that's the whole gamble. There has been zero proof of it. Well, that's not true. There have been moments where they've been healthy and playing where they have been the best player on the field. There's been zero proof that they'll do it consistently. There's been zero proof that they do it in a way that enhances each other's game. But the idea being, you're DeAndre Kerr. Soccer is a lot easier if two guys are going to Insigne anytime he's near the ball. And anytime Bernardeschi breathes, a defender has to take a half step closer to him. That's going to make the game easier for the other guys.
Most interesting player to watch outside of those stars, Doyle. Who you got?
Probably Latif Blessing, because right now I have him as a starter in central midfield on the depth chart. And we all can remember back to the 2019 LAFC team. They really took off when Latif Blessing earned that role as a starter, a pressing number 10. His ability to play both sides of the ball, to add to the attack, to win the ball a ton all over the field, but especially when pressing. That, in a way, that defined that team. And we really haven't seen that version of Latif Blessing again. Well, now he's in a situation where there are a ton of starting jobs up for grabs, and there are wingers to either side of him who are not going to do anything defensively based upon what we've seen through the past season and a half. So if there's a moment for him to shine and for him to become the 2019 version of Latif Blessing again, this is it. It's here.
Give me Jakeel Marshall-Ruddy. There was so much hype about Marshall-Ruddy and the path that he could be on, and he never really got sustained. He got hurt, and the minutes he has gotten, you haven't seen as many flashes of that ability as you would have wanted to see. So can Herdman get through to Jakeel Marshall-Ruddy, get him opportunity, get him thriving in what could be an absolutely chaotic team? Maybe the only guy who knows non-chaos in this roster, Dave, is Jonathan Osorio. Can he right the ship? What do you think it's like for him right now?
Probably not ideal and probably not exactly what he thought he was signing up for, but he's the guy I pick for this category, because I think over the course of this show, it's just been, for me, who do I want to tune into? Who do I like? Jonathan Osorio off the field, it's everything you want, right? He's a local. He fought through some really good teams to get minutes against players who have incredible resumes, and he's become the face of this team. And 15 years ago, a player from his background couldn't even play pro, and now he can get paid out to have the life he wants and play on the biggest stage and push for World Cup minutes for Canada, all doing it through Toronto FC. And it's been big, I think, because there's been so much changeover. He's kind of been the lone representative of, like, this is what the expectations should be at this club. And now with Michael Bradley leaving as well, all of that falls on Osorio. It might be a little bit too much if your TDPs are vaping and don't care for him to battle upstream against that, but he's going to be the one trying.
Oh, man, what an absurd place Toronto has been, and it seems like it will continue to be. So I'm going to make you combine This Is Fine and why it could be their year, because, boy, those two seemed very intertwined, unfortunately, for Toronto. We kind of established the pitfalls. We saw them last year. Like, we witnessed it. We almost don't need to talk about that again. What is success, and can they get there?
The This Is Fine is Insigne and Bernardeschi are the guys who we saw last year and most of the year before. The way it works is if both those guys, you know, two of the highest paid players in the league, if they are actually two of the five or six best players in the league. And I'm not going to say that's the entirety of it, but like if those guys are that good and care and play like they care week after week after week, then this is a team that could, I don't know, brute force their way into the playoffs, maybe. It's MLS, crazy stuff happens, but I'm not expecting that.
Sorry to not be more hopeful for you, Reds supporters. We're doing our best, but not a ton of material to work with. All right, DC United finishes it off, 40 points. That's plus 13 points year over year. So look, it can happen. You can go from the bottom to, well, 12th in the East and not making the playoffs for the fourth year in a row, but you can do it. You can do it. Haiku, black and red restart. Culture takes time to take root. The past is the past. They cannot lean on the past anymore. DC United has to confront the present and the future, and neither of those things have looked particularly bright for a few years now. The only bright spots came as sort of gimmicks. Wayne Rooney and Lucho short-term together. Wayne Rooney as the boss to take them back to some place of glory, and it hasn't happened. Key transfers in. Gabriel Priani, permanent transfer in. Matti Poltola, a new young DP defensive midfielder from Finland. Aaron Herrera, which could be a sneaky good signing we'll talk more about. Christopher McVay from Miami via trade. Then you have Jared Stroud, Lucas Bartlett from St. Louis. Doe Blair coming over after being cut by the Sounders, and Jacob Murrell in the super draft. On the outside, Andy Nahar, Nigel Roberta, Donovan Pines, Derek Williams, Huon, Chris Durkin, Brendan Heinzeik, Yamil Assad, who was still sticking around here. What does Lassane Ball look like in black and red, Doyle?
It's still going to be a lot of pressing. I'm not sure it's going to be as high and hard and devoid of any inkling of possession as what we saw from his Red Bulls team last year. I think that was him coming in as a sort of normal pressing coach and cranking that up to 11 and adopting the Red Bulls template. So that said, like FC Cincinnati, Philadelphia Union, St. Louis City, those types of pressing teams who spend as much time sort of as mid-block ambush as they are outright high pressing. I think that's what this DC United team will try to look like. And I think they have the pieces to do it. And the more I look at their roster, especially with the acquisition of McVay, the left-footed left back, and Herrera, who has played right back, right wing back, and right center back in a three, I think this team really lends itself well to a 3-5-2. Just the personnel, it's all right there for them. That said, you know, we haven't seen any of their preseason games yet. There's not a lot leaking out. We're not sure what kind of formation they're going to play. But I do think a two-forward setup is more likely than a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3 or a 4-1-4-1.
Christian Benteke last year was the bright spot. Dave, 14 goals in about 2,800 minutes. Is that the expectation, or is there something more that Benteke can give?
I think he can give more, and I think it's fair for them to expect it. He was healthy. That was huge. I think he showed last year that if you give him service, he'll score, and what he's capable of doing on the field can overwhelm defenders enough that he can even create his own chances with not a ton of service. Whether it's his ability in possession, I think it's more that you combine that with his strength, with his size, that you can take low leverage opportunities and they become goal scoring chances when he's on the field. And then the hope, I think, this year is that there's more stability around him of just like knowing who he's playing with, having played with them before, whether it's Click or Kudipietro or Pirani, whoever it is, he will now have relationship with those players, which he was figuring out on the fly last year as pieces were coming in and out in his second season. So I think it's fair to expect more from him. I think it's fair to say this is someone who should be in the Golden Boot race.
Speaking of the ins and outs, last year, Lewis O'Brien was one of those. Jason in DC hit us up and said, I was listening to David Goss on the Daily Soccer Show podcast talk about Poltola. Made me think of how United performed when Lewis O'Brien was with the team. Is Peltola's profile similar to O'Brien, or perhaps his impact? DC collected 24 points in 16 matches with O'Brien, 7-6-3, and won just three games when he wasn't with the team. So I think my player to watch outside of the stars is a trio. It's Pirani, it's Click, and it's Poltola. on paper, that's a pretty talented midfield. It does have two very young pieces. Click's got to be the guy that brings it all together. But there's a lot of potential there. I don't think expecting Potola to be O'Brien is necessarily both in profile and in production the right expectation. But to play his own way, to provide stability, to let Click get forward a little bit more, I think that would be a positive development. But Doyle, you wrote Ted Cudipietro, and obviously we can't avoid that conversation. What can he be underneath, perhaps, Christian Benteke?
Yeah, I mean, Cudipietro as a second forward last year with Benteke, it wasn't just his box score numbers, it was his underlying numbers, and it was also Benteke's underlying numbers. I think he jumped from like 0.37 XG per 90 when he wasn't partnered with Cudipietro to about 0.54, which is, I mean, it's almost like a 50% jump, and his box score numbers showed as much. So Cudipietro only ended up playing about 1,000 minutes, I think, in the last year of regular season. He hasn't really been a true second forward throughout his youth career, but that's partially because not a lot of teams play with two forwards anymore. But he's been much better there as a pro than he has been on the wing. So I'm hoping that the glimpses we saw of this partnership down the stretch, I'm hoping we see him from the start. From everything that we've heard, Cudipietro's in line to be like captain or vice captain at age 22, which certainly tends to indicate that he's going to be a big piece of this team. Hopefully it all comes together. Like, I love a story like that where a homegrown kid, as like, it's like the Osorio thing with Toronto FC. Like, he's Osorio is the biggest reason to watch Toronto this year still. Cudipietro could be that, except 10 years younger. And like, that's great. That's a win in my book for DC United if it works out that way.
All right, we'll get your Aaron Herrera thoughts in a second, Dave, because I know you got those burning in you. But the over-under I have is 42.5 points. That's playoff competitive. 43 points doesn't guarantee you make the playoffs. Neither, I guess, would 42. But right in that mix, do you guys think that DC United are playoff competitive?
I'm going to take the over. I'm more bullish on this team than maybe I should be, but I'm going to take the over.
All right. Okay. Now take the under, Doyle. The this is fine meme. Blow it all up.
Pirani was in the first percentile, as in one of the very worst in the, not just the entire league, but the entire world as per FB Ref in terms of chance creation as number 10.
They created a new scale just for him. And just for him.
So they don't have a real chance creator. Their wingbacks are old on one side and not really wingbacks on the other side. Birnbaum gets hurt. There's no backline anchor. Alex Bono was really good in short minutes last year, but that turns into a mirage. Clique is too old. Benteke gets old. You know, he's in his mid-30s now. It all just sort of falls apart, right? There are no givens on this team, and they just keep, you know, tossing craps time and time and time again.
All right, Dave, you took the over. So give me some positivity.
Well, I was going to say real quick with Doyle, I think that's well said of there are no givens. Every line for this team has massive question marks. And that's like, if everything goes well, there are still massive question marks. So now I'm doing the positivity thing, which is that with a guy in Troy Lesane who's been around North American soccer and a new general manager who knows the league, like, this is a group that will understand what's required of them. And what we saw from Houston last year and what we've seen from St. Louis and other teams, like, if you try really hard and you're cohesive, you're going to pick up points in MLS. And so if they're that team this year, they've got an elite goal scorer in Benteke, who will be healthy. It's not just Cudipietro. It is one of the talent-rich areas in American soccer history, and it still continues to be. Christian Fletcher could be a part of this team, Matayak and Bomi as well. Those kids start getting minutes, they start to increase their potential of sell on after this, and the guys they've spent on are able to carry the ship. I mean, they should have two DPs in central midfield, and they should have Steve Birnbaum, one of the best center backs in this league's history, as their starting center back. I thought Chris McVie was a perfect example of, like, that's a good MLS move. You know, Inter Miami has to get rid of players So you're going to get a really good deal for a, he's not special, but a guy who showed he could be versatile and in a starting team for a competitive MLS.
And let me just build on that. And that's, I think that's one of the reasons that I like, that I'm more bullish on this team, is because I do think the pieces fit in theory. And if you're playing a back three with McVay, and I don't know whether it's McVay or McVay, I think it's McVay, as your left center back and Herrera as your right center back, then you have two really good options for distribution, for playing off the back line and getting those midfielders and those wingbacks into positions where they can impact the game at a really positive high level, which I think then takes some of the pressure off of Pirani and even Kudipietro in terms of chance creation. So I just think in terms of what the roster looks like, It works on paper for me, but yeah, the game's played on grass.
Speaking of things that work on paper, 7-minute team previews. Oh boy, they've worked on paper for us, but almost never in practice. Always distracted, but always interested in the nooks and crannies of every team around the league as we build up to 2024. We hope you enjoyed these 7 previews. Many more to come. We'll hit you with our awards later on this week, as well as the Golden Boot Draft. Big thanks to the King of Mardi Gras for joining us today. You can't see it, but David Goss was wearing a beautiful golden crown for much of this show. And thank you to Mr. Doyle for helping us understand what these teams are going to look like this year. That's it for us. We will see you on Thursday, everybody. Enjoy your week. Tick-tock, tick-tock, 2024 season coming soon. Adios.